On this episode of Tips from the Top Floor, Sean wonders if there is a sweet spot for scanning photos, and Jay is interested in the legitimacy of in-camera filters. This episode of Tips from the Top Floor is brought to you by discoverthetopfloor.com, the one place that will teach you to see the world through the eyes of a real photographer. Spend an amazing time with like-minded people of all skill levels at places you always dreamt of: the desert of Morocco, the fjords of northern Norway, Kyrgyzstan along the Silk Road, Romania and fall, Bohemian castles in the Czech Republic, and we'll go back to Lake Baikal in Siberia in early 2020. More at discoverthetopfloor.com. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 838 for Thursday, August the 30th, 2018.
Tips from the top floor, tips from the top, all right, from the top floor.
Hey, hello and welcome. It's Chris Marquardt with your favorite photography show, Tips from the Top Floor, episode 838. I'm pre-recording this a couple of weeks before, no, actually 1 week before it comes out, because I am in Ireland at this point. I think it's Thursday when this comes out. No, it's Friday when this comes out. So I'll probably be on the way to Giant's Causeway, the basalt columns, lava-made volcanic origin at the sea. We're in for some like hexagonal columns and tens of thousands of those. This is a sight to see. I'm looking forward to that. And we'll go to the Dark Hedges, which is featured in Game of Thrones, which is this long road with trees on both sides leaning in towards the middle. And if you get at the end of that and take a picture down the road, well, you have to wait till there's no car, because it's an official road, and you have to wait till there's no car, and wait till the people are gone, or do a good job cloning them out later. And if you do this with a telephoto lens, you get this compressed layer of tree branches. Kind of, it's a beautiful photo. It's the header photo on the Ireland photo tour page. I'm going to link to that in the show notes so you can have a look. Anyway, what's up on today's show? Of course, your questions again, your inputs, your wisdom, your anecdotes. Love when you send in stuff. And the first one who has sent something in is Sean.
Hi, Chris. This is Sean from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I have a question about scanning 35mm. I'm getting back into, you know, using film again, and when I send it off to get developed to a lab, there's all the different tiers you can do when you get it scanned. So my question is, what's the sweet spot? What are the pros and cons? Is it worth the extra expense to get the higher resolution scans? Thank you very much. Love the show.
John, thank you. What is the sweet spot for scanning when someone else scans your photos? That's a tough nut to crack, because you know, there are lots of parameters when scanning. There's, of course, the resolution, kind of the most prominent one, DPI. How many pixels per inch does the scan include? And especially with smaller formats like 35mm, that's really important. We're talking 4,000 dots per inch, or 6,000 or 9,000. Scanners come in different sizes, and they do different things there. Typically, higher is better, right? But then the file sizes grow as well, so the sweet spot in the scanning resolution might mean you need to get some more hard drive space, unless they compress it. But then it's a matter of what kind of compression is there. When I scan, I usually scan to TIFF, and it's uncompressed, but which means that a scan can have many megabytes, way more than any JPEG would have. And then the question is, what scanner do they use? Because some scanners, while they give you a big DPI number, like 9,200 DPI on the box, in fact, they are optically only able to scan lower, and then there's some extrapolation. So they pretty much use the lower resolution scan and do some math to make it bigger, which makes bigger files, but it doesn't give you more sharpness. That's stuff they don't tell you. And then there's the color depth. I'm assuming that they will hopefully scan at 16 bits per channel, which is, with a color scan, it's 48 bits in total. But you have to verify that. Do they only scan 8 bits? Do they maybe to save on space? But that will also save on the channel's ability to resolve not size but different levels of brightness. And then there are also automatisms in the scanning software. There's, for example, most scanners have some dust removal, scratch removal, which often goes by the name ICE, which is pretty much a second pass in the scanning, but not lit from behind, but from the top with an infrared light, which takes kind of twice as long because it doubles the scanning time. So labs might not want to do that for cost reasons because they will then take more time. There's digital dust removal, which is not the ICE. It's software-based. It smooths the photo, but it changes it also. And then there's another sort of grain removal there, which is, again, software-based, and it's a smoothing of the film structure. But then if I think of the beautiful grain of a Kodak Tri-X film, why would I have one the grain removed? I'm shooting this because I love the grain. So, yeah, and then there's sharpening, which is not really sharpening. It's an artificial contrast edge enhancement. It doesn't add any real sharpness. It adds fake sharpness, which you can do much better in Lightroom. And has many parameters like the strength and the radius and the threshold. So the several problems with that. The lab usually hides all of that complexity behind a pull-down on their website where you choose one parameter and that's the resolution, right? You cannot choose the other stuff typically. So you don't have a real handle on what they will do with the film. Second problem, you don't know what scanners they use, so you don't really have a way of finding out what resolution is realistic. With one lab, you might say, okay, I want this at 6,000 dpi, and their scanner might be happy to do exactly that and give you very, very detailed photos. While another lab might also offer you 6,000 dpi, but they use a scanner that optically can only do 2,000, and then the rest is just artificially inflated. And then the problem is, I assume that standard development labs that have not specialized on digitizing photos, they will try to save on time. I mean, they are under some form of economic pressure, so they'll probably try to cut corners. Which is why I scan my own stuff, because then I know exactly what I get. And when I say scanning, most of my digitizing of photos is now, as I've talked about in some of the recent episodes, is a photograph. I take my digital SLR, I have a copy stand, I have a light table under it, and I take a very high resolution picture of a negative, especially with the 35 millimeters, that yields a lot more resolution than a flatbed scanner can typically get you. So the sweet spot for scanning, there is no good answer, as you can tell. It also depends on what you need. What do you want to do with those photos later on? Are you planning to print 8x10s? Or are you planning to make them, to blow them up in poster size? Do you just want to look at them on your screen? My old photos, if I go back to my photos from the end of the 80s, which were mostly slides because those were the cheapest, and it was mostly Fuji Velvia, I think, because that was kind of the best offer. I'd say maybe 5% of those are artistically valuable. The rest is just for documentary purposes. Yeah, when I go back, I have learned a lot about photography since then. So I would probably get like high resolution scans of maybe just a handful of those, and the rest I'd be happy with just some middle of the road fully automated scan just to keep them digital. And that's what I pretty much did. So I have a lot of those photos, yeah, just in a decent resolution to look at them on the screen, but I don't have any intentions of really printing those out, getting those in a gallery or something. They're just not good enough for that. So I hope that helps answer your question.
Hi, Chris. It's Philip, a long-time listener from Czech Republic. You just mentioned, I'm just listening to your show, and you just mentioned that you are planning a trip to Czech Republic next May. If you need some help, maybe some information, whatever, just let me know. I understood that it was a castle tour. I'm living in south of Bohemia, in city of Czech Krumlov, the second biggest castle in the Czech Republic. So maybe I can arrange something for you. Yeah. Thanks for the show. Have a good time. Have a nice night. Bye.
Thank you, Filip. Oh, this is awesome. Thank you so much for offering your help. I really appreciate that. And every time a local offers their support, it just makes me very happy because it means you care and you want to help me show off your country in the best possible light. And that is, yeah, that is worth a lot. Now, in the specific case of our Czech Republic tour, which, yes, it has a lot of castles. It's not only castles. There's also landscapes and the culture, the people, the cities, the medieval cities and things. But I think we're calling it the Bohemian Castles Tour or something like that. In the case of that specific tour, we already have plenty of local support. In fact, I will do that workshop tour together with my friend Tim, whose wife is Czech. She's from there. She's a photographer too, and he and she live in the Czech Republic. So as it's planned right now, we're pretty much set for the tour. But in general, and also for you, Filip, if you're local to one of my photo tours, I'm happy if you hit me up, if you ask me if you can help. And especially if you let me know if you can offer anything interesting there that we would not be able to see any other way, you know. Well, I always look for great landscapes and architecture and culture. That's kind of what's near and dear to my heart. I also always want to see like stuff behind the scenes, stuff that you can't really get to any other way. Like, I mean, looking inside a power station or behind the scenes of a theater or visit a coal mine or, I don't know, get a look inside a brewery. I mean, you name it. Things that are typically hard to get access to for the public. One of my favorite stories, I'm pretty sure I've told it here in the show before, but one thing about behind the scenes access that I've done is from, that's over 15 years ago, I had the chance to go inside a massive church organ, which was like a wooden construction inside, and it stretched over three floors. It was really big, and it had tens of thousands of pipes in there, and I was allowed in there for like an hour to climb around their ladders in there and stuff. But the kicker was that while I was in there taking pictures, it was being played for the whole time. There was a guy practicing, and yeah, what an amazing experience. Most likely once in a lifetime. And no, before you ask, no, it wasn't super loud. Most of that sound in an organ is directed outwards, not inwards. But I don't think I'll ever be able to do that again. But you know, it's an experience that I will never forget. I wouldn't have gotten in there without knowing someone who could give me access to that. And to get access to something special with a photo tour, I mean, it doesn't have to be a church organ, obviously, but, well, you get the idea. So if you're anywhere near any of the upcoming tours, and if you can provide access to something local, something interesting, something memorable, something behind the scenes, by all means, reach out to me. I always love to add unexpected, interesting things to the photo tours.
Hi, Chris. This is Jay from Pennsylvania. Just have a question for you about digital cameras that use in-camera film effects like Tri-X or Slide Chrome film. It looks the same as using actual film. Or even in-camera filters that apply certain filters to simulate the same effect you get when you put a physical filter over your lens, or even in-camera art filters. What are your thoughts about these sorts of tools to use and whether they're legitimate or not. I think in many instances they're a great tool to use. I don't see any difference between using a filter over the lens or applying an in-camera filter. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are about that. Thanks a lot and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Jay. In-camera filters, yeah, there's a lot of them. Film simulations, different kinds of artistic filters, sepia tone. And your question is, are they legitimate? And the answer is, of course they are. I mean, it's art. We're talking about taste, you know? As long as you don't hurt anyone with your art and your taste, then have at it. I mean, it's that simple. But, and of course, I'd be the last person to tell you what you should and shouldn't do when it comes to the look of your photos. The only thing I can tell you is, and show you, is what works for me and how I do the photography that I do and the post-processing that I like. And, of course, I can tell you stuff like I'm not a fan of over-the-top HDR photography, but, well, if you want to do that, it's totally up to you. I will just not like it. Now, the in-camera filters are kind of an interesting thing because they do a really good job trying to replicate existing film looks that we might have grown up with or that have become popular again. Fuji, for example, is interesting there because they produce some iconic films still, and they make digital cameras, and that they melted that together by adding simulations of their own films into their digital cameras, like Velvia or Provia. Those are very iconic film looks. Now, my personal preference, again, is that I want to experience film photography with film and not through a simulation. And while there are many reasons for that, the two main reasons in my case are that a simulation will never be able to fully simulate the intricacies of film. There's just way too much to it. And once you've done this yourself, you understand that. But even more important, I love the process. It teaches me so much for all my other photography, including the digital photography. I have to do metering. The highlight latitude of film is amazing. The conscious decision how to expose film is something that teaches you so much. The manual focus will give me full control. There's ways to influence the grain structure and contrast of film and development. You know, that's me. I love doing that. That's my personal taste. That has nothing to do with the legitimacy of using film simulations. So if you like what you get from those, then that's all you need for it to be legitimate. And by the way, here's a tip. If you shoot RAW and JPEG, the JPEG will have the film simulation kind of baked into it, but the RAW file will not have it. So you are still free to play with the photo during editing as much as you like. All right, and that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Thank you so much for being subscribed. If you're not, by the way, that is still the best way to get the podcast. Go to where you get your other podcasts, type in Tips from the Top Floor, and hit the subscribe button. It's free, and you can unsubscribe whenever you like. If you like this episode, let me know by giving the show a rating on iTunes, maybe a few stars or a little bit about the show. That is the best way to help Tips from the Top Floor stay in the spotlight by interacting with it on iTunes or by supporting it in any other way. I mean, Patreon is there, and I appreciate everyone who supports the show on Patreon. You guys are awesome. Word of mouth works as well. If you let other people know on whatever social media platforms you're on, Tips from the Top Floor depends on your support, and every little helps. More at tfttf.com/support. Thank you so much. Also, thanks again to Dougal for supporting this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, silent partner in Hans-Peter Kagrud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rafsitar Armstead, Slack Imitations by Chief Imitation Officer CIO Rusty Russ, and of course, the link to get onto the TFTTF Slack is in the show notes. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media, including Mastodon, at Chris, MarquardT. I remember that. Now, go out and take amazing photos, be nice to each other, makes it easier to leave it. And happy shooting.